Okay. Here we go. Oh, you're putting it right there? Ah! That red light syndrome, I call it. Okay. My name's Mikey, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Angelique and Stan, for asking me to speak. It is a pleasure and an honor to be asked to speak in front of everybody. And I'm so full of nerves. So can we all say the Serenity Prayer together, please? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. All right. So, let's start at the beginning. I have a sobriety date. It is July 27th of 2013. I have a sponsor, and she knows she's my sponsor. and I don't just call her when things are crumbling down, because I've done that too. And that never works out. Sorry, I have my notes up here. Because, you know, we got to just follow through and then we end up not following them. I was born in Santa Barbara, California, SB, 805 all day. To wonderful parents. They met each other. I was born in the 80s. So my parents I was born through the cocaine and sex, love, and rock and roll era. So my parents had me, and they both had a 9-year-old son each, and then I was born. And my parents loved to do lots of cocaine, and they loved to party. And when I came into the world, I was very... My older brothers were much older, and then there was me. And my mom has reminded me all the time I was very good at playing with myself and playing alone and doing things. And then my mom and my dad, I was an ultimate love child. So my parents never got married. My parents never were together. But my parents have always gotten along through my whole life. My parents have always had a wonderful relationship. Granted, my dad was in Vietnam, so he was very... went through a lot with his emotions and all of that, and he was in jail at one point, I remember when I was a kid, but he always showed up as much as he could with what he had working for him. My mom, she was very aloof, but there, and because she's an alcoholic. So then my mom met my stepdad, and my brother was born. And my younger brother. And growing up with that, I was a stepchild. I was the ultimate stepchild in my family. So I didn't realize it when I was younger, but as I got older, I started seeing more of how I was treated and just things. My stepdad's always been there and great, but there's always been a favoritism towards my brother my whole life. So where did that leave me? Empty, feeling like I'm less than, feeling like I'm never good enough. Feeling like there's something always missing. I remember in elementary school, after school program, Willie, he would always say to me, Mikey, you're always bickering. You're always just sad. You're always crying over this and that and this and that. Because I was an emotional child. I was very emotional. And so growing up with that was very hard. But with my stepdad and my mom, something that was awesome about that was we went camping and we did things a lot as a family. So I had a pretty normal childhood when it came to things that we did as a family. So we went to the beach all the time. We had a Volkswagen van, which as a child I was made so much fun of for that fucking Volkswagen van. But now everybody wants that van that used to make fun of me as a kid. And my mom still drives that van around. It's real beat up. But that van is still alive and going. They tell me that's what I'm going to get when they die. So I'm cool with that. we went everywhere in that thing. And for the most part, you know, everything was good. Then living in Santa Barbara. So I grew up on the Riviera, if you know anything about the Santa Barbara. Because my mom took care of an older woman she was the toast of Prague, for one. But she was an older woman. My mom took care of her, and we lived in her house, because back then you could live in the residence, because she took care. And they partied a lot in there. And then my window, I was all of Santa Barbara from my bedroom window. So I had this, like, you know, as a child. And then we moved to the west side, and we lived on Chino Street. and then, you know, living there in our little tiny house, and, like, you know, and then my grandmother died. And when my grandmother died, she lived in Lompoc. And so what did we do? Well, my mom inherited my grandmother's house in Lompoc, so we moved to Lompoc. So I finished elementary school in Santa Barbara. We drove down to Santa Barbara, commuted lots as a kid. And then my mom ended up losing her job when she started staying home. And then out of nowhere, my mom gets a phone call and my brother died. I was 11 years old when my brother died. He died of a heroin overdose, an accidental heroin overdose. My brother had sobriety underneath him. He had gone to jail and found sobriety, but he passed away of a heroin overdose. And that, I did not understand what drugs were as a kid at all, because I was just, I should not know what that is. But that was devastating. And watching my mom lose her child, I just, everything kicked in. I became a mom. I became a wife. I became a daughter. I became a student. I became everything. And I bared all of this on me at 11 years old. And I couldn't handle it. So I needed something. So where did I go? Well, I didn't find alcohol at that point in my life. I found Jesus and church. So I went to 5 different youth groups as a kid, because I just wanted to fill my life up with as much church as I could to get out of my head. And so in high school, church girl meets church boy, and we were together all through high school sweethearts, and loved each other. Senior year hits, beginning of senior year, and right before senior year hits, he takes me to the beach and he gives me a promise ring and he's like, I want to spend the rest of my life with you. And I'm like, I'm not ready for that. I am young. I want to experience life. I don't know if I want to be with you forever, but it was like the thing, like everybody was, you know, they kind of push you, and we were, he's my best friend. And I just was like, I don't know. So what did I do? I got scared and I moved away to my dad's in San Francisco, because I was like, well, I never lived fully with my dad. I want to give my dad an opportunity to be in my life and be a dad and give me what I need from a dad. And so I up and left my life here in Lompoc, middle of my senior year, October it was, and I moved. And when I moved, what was left behind? My church. So when I moved, I was completely out there. I was trying to figure out who I was going to be friends with, what. I ended up dating one of the most popular boys in school, but he was popular because he was one of those popular scummy boys, kind of, like that one that's like, you know, like you shouldn't date him, but you do. And so I did. And so then I became cool, but I wasn't drinking yet, but I went to a lot of parties and I was around it. And living in Marin County, everybody's rich. A lot of my friends had a lot of money. I got to drive lots of fun BMWs. I went to parties that were on people's yachts and things like that in the Bay Area, which was so much fun. But then I went to a party and it was one night that I wasn't going home. And I saw how fun everybody was having, and I kept, you know, I kept going to the, and I was like, I want to try it. So I drank alcohol that night, and it was like, woo, I have something to blame everything on. And I was off and running. That night, my boyfriend at the time wasn't with me, but I did call him drunk because I felt so free that I could say whatever I wanted. There was like 6 of us girls that were throwing up in one bathroom. It was absolutely disgusting. And I woke up like halfway in, halfway out the sliding glass door of this house. Like all of us are just, there was a lot of kids at this party. And woke up in the morning like, what the hell happened? And ended up at going back to my friend's house, and they're like, you need to sober up before we go home. And I'm like, okay. So I got myself together as much as I could, and I went home. My older brother was home, and my older brother from my dad, and he was like, you smell like alcohol. And I'm like, oh, shoot. So he's like, go take a shower. Well, he told my dad, and I got in really big trouble. So I got in really, really big trouble. So I was like, okay, well, then if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have to fucking hide it. So I drank once in a while, and I tried smoking weed, and I did that. It never did anything for me, really. My joke is I've smoked weed probably like 29 times my whole life. But then I ended up moving back to Lompoc because shit wasn't working out for me in the Bay Area anymore. So I moved back to Lompoc. In 2006, I was 19 years old, my house burnt down. And I was homeless. My family was homeless. And my younger brother, he was able to stay with my parents. But me, they were like, you got to go figure it out. So the way that I figured it out was I was living with a friend, and she liked to drink a lot. So I started drinking a lot, and I started learning, oh, well, if I just drink all the time and I go everywhere, then I have somewhere to stay and I have somewhere to be. And then that just consumed me. And it was like I had a drink to just do anything and go anywhere and spend time with anyone. I always had water bottles of vodka in my car. You didn't know if it was going to be water or vodka. You didn't know what it was. I would get super wasted. I was the party girl. I was so excited. One of my nicknames in this town was Snooky. If you know anything about anything, I was so proud to be called Snooky. I was like, yes, I got a fucking name. And, you know, and I ran with it. I was either here or I was here with drinking. It was like either I was like super high on the sky or I was low down in the ground crying, depressed. Just everything's not going my way. I was awful. I would steal. I stole money from my brother all the time from his change jar. I stole money from my stepdad all the time. And not proud of that. That's something that I did. When I drank, you could drink and drive, but I won't because you're going to get the DUI. I'm not. So, and that's how I was. I was like, you're going to get all the rap, but I'm not. I'm going to run the other way because I don't care about you. It's all about me. So then when I was 22, I moved to San Francisco for another boy. And I I was taking Prozac at the time because, you know, I was going to the doctor. I'm like, I'm not happy. I don't know what to do. And they're like, well, here's Prozac. And I was like, okay. And I was like running all over the hills in San Francisco. But I also was drinking all over San Francisco. And that was back like when like we used to bring so much alcohol and just drink it on the Muni and on the buses and go to all the they had a lot of free festivals back when I was in my early 20s. I sound like I'm so old, but I did. And so we would go and do all of that. So we came down to visit in Santa Barbara, or down here in Lompoc. His family was from Lompoc too. And when we were down here visiting, I ended up, my friends were like, you look like a crackhead. What are you doing? And I'm like, I'm on Prozac and I'm partying all the time. And they're just like, what the fuck is there? Like, you look gross. And I'm like, I'm going to stop taking my Prozac. So when I was down here, I stopped taking my Prozac. And you should not do that. Because when we were driving home, we got in an argument. And this argument escalated into me wanting to jump out of a moving vehicle and ending up in 5150 because I wanted to kill myself. I had lost my mind. So the next day, he took me to the hospital because he's like, I can't handle your shit. And he dropped me off at the hospital, and they shipped me over to Alt Bates in the East Bay. And I was there for 3 days. Because I told them, if you let me smoke a cigarette, I'll stay longer. But they said, nope, we don't allow that here. So I said, I'm going to be fucking perfect so I could get the hell out of here and smoke. So when I was there, the boyfriend at the time, he would visit me. He came and he brought me, like, food and stuff. And then I got out, went straight home with him. He actually picked me up, and I went straight to party that night in San Francisco. And then from there, I looked through his phone, and he was cheating on me. And I was like, tight. So, you know, I was like, awesome, you know? So I ended up coming back down to Lompoc. And because I, like, am one that wherever I go, there I am. And I would leave. It was, like, about 2 years I'd stay somewhere. About 2 years. And then I'd be like, shit is not happening my way. I'm leaving. So I would just up and left. I came back to Lompoc. And coming back to Lompoc, I had lots of party days with lots of my friends. But then one of my greatest friends, she was sober. And she was learning about sobriety. She went to rehab. And I was like, what the hell is rehab? And, you know, because I, like, did not know anything. You know, I just knew how to party. And I thought that that's what you did when you're young and you're in your 20s and, early teens. I was like, this is just what you do. This is just life, right? Like, this is just what everybody's doing. But I wasn't drinking normally. I didn't know I had a problem, though, either, because everybody around me was the same. So how did I know any different? But then I had this friend who was like, I'm going to rehab because I'm a heroin addict. And I was like, that makes sense why you're going in the bathroom and not coming out for, like, a fucking hour, you know? Like, you know, and it was a shock. But I was so sick in my disease, I didn't even realize my friend was killing herself on a day-to-day basis and could have fucking died at any moment in the bathroom. And so, you know, or wherever she was. And so, so then my whole friend group, they all started getting sober. And then I was wanting to get sober, but I was like, I can't do this around all of you, so I'm going to move to Oregon. And I'm going to get sober in Oregon. And so I went to Oregon, and I lived with my aunt. And when I first moved up there, I was going out and stuff, and I was drinking, and that because I wasn't fully ready yet. And then on April 3rd, 2012, that was my first sobriety date, and I ended up getting into an outpatient program because I was like, whatever, I'm going to just be in this program and it's going to help me get sober. Well, one of their requirements was that I go to AA meetings. So my very first AA meeting, I'm in Oregon, and I walk into this meeting, and I'm 26 years old. And I'm like, oh my God, okay. And there's old people in there. And I was like, I am not old, you know? And, you know, and they're coming up to me and they're hugging me and they're saying welcome. And I'm like, welcome to fucking what? You know, I don't know what I'm doing. And, you know, I they say I have a problem with alcohol. I guess I do, but like, but everyone's old in here. You have to be old to qualify, right? Like, you have to be old, drinking out of a paper bag, homeless. Like, not, you know, I literally thought that that's what you had to have, like, to be an alcoholic. I literally thought you had to be, like, a gutter rat, a person that just was ghetto to be an alcoholic. I did not know it could look like you and me. It could be a perfectly well-fit person that is completely broken and eaten inside. When I was in Oregon, I wanted to become a pothead also. So then that's like, because I'm like, I'm in Oregon. I like wasn't wearing underwear. I was smoking pot all the time. And I was just, and that's just like what I did. I was like, this is how people live here. And I did, you know, and I thought that was so cool. And then of course I was about one of my friends. It was a boy, of course. And of course, and I was all about him, and I was like, he was not all about me. And so I got really, really sad. And I didn't, you know, I had only gone to the one meeting that was in Oregon. Or no, I went to two, actually. The one meeting I went to, and then all those people were, like, you know, hugging me and stuff. They actually asked me to get up and speak in front of everybody and tell them about myself. And I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to talk about at all. And then I tried another meeting. It didn't work out because I was like, okay, this is not for me. And so, so after that friend of mine, he hurt my heart, I was like, I'm going to go find the most ghettoist liquor store in this town because everybody knows I'm trying to be sober and I'm going to get a box of wine. Because I can't go out on vodka because I know I'm just going to be way too wasted, but I'm going to get really wasted on this entire box of wine. So I got this entire box of wine, and I went home, and I poured cups just chugged it. And I ended up drinking just about almost all of this box of wine. One of my friends called me who knew I was trying to be sober, and he calls me, and he's like, Mike, what are you doing? It was pouring down rain, and I said, I'm getting drunk. And he said, fuck no, you're not. And he came, it was my friend Ryan in Oregon, and he came and he picked me up, and he took my wine away from me, and he said, you're not doing this anymore. Come home with me, I'm gonna make you macaroni and cheese and put you to bed. So he made me macaroni and cheese, and of course, I had to go outside and be in the rain on my phone, dramatic with I had to be so dramatic about it, you know, one last time. And then we ended up, you know, I went to bed, and then I said, I'm going to move back to Lompoc. So I moved back to Lompoc in December of 2012. I lasted a little bit over a year in Oregon. Was not the place for me. When I came back, that's when things got really, really bad in my life and very, very dark. I drank so heavily. For an entire month, I had two friends, but we all slept. We called ourselves vampires. We slept all day and drank all night. And all we ate was Hot Pockets and Honey Nut Cheerios. The entire month. And I wasn't working at the time because I didn't want to go back to work. Because my job here, for some whatever fucking reason, like, was willing to take me back. I used to drive that company vehicle, like, still drunk from the night before when I worked for that company. But he still wanted to take me back, so I said, I'll come back when I'm ready. And so I was lucky enough to go back to work after a moment of time, but my last drink was, and I was one where I would just pass out in the shower. I would just go to places, and I would just pass out. My roommate, when I was living with her at the time, I would pass out in the shower, and she'd find me with cold water on me and just in there. Like, lifeless. Like, how am I not dead? Because I absolutely have a God that's been watching over me 100%. Going to Santa Barbara that night, I called a friend who was just a random friend, like always, because it was always random people. It was anybody who was willing to drink like me or worse than me, so I thought. And I went to Santa Barbara, driving down there with her, drinking, of course, on the way there because I never could show up anywhere not already wasted. And I went out, and one of my friends who lived down there, he was like, I'm having a party at my house. And I was like, okay, I'm going to leave all these people here at the bar, and I'm just going to take off with you. So I took off with him to his house. And on the way, we picked up some alcohol, went back to his house, and just drink. And I thought, too, that night, because I already was so wasted. So my thing was, when I was already so wasted, I'd get some wine so I can at least have something, but then I'd still be sneaking. I did this thing called the half shot crew, where we would pour half shots because it made it seem like you weren't drinking as much, but you're really drinking, like, twice the amount. And we would hold it. I would hold shots in my mouth on purpose just so I could get drunk faster, because when you hold it in your mouth and you put it under your tongue, it hits you harder. Like, I literally, and I would swish it. Like, that's how gross I was. And everybody would be like, how the hell are you so drunk so fast? And it's like, because I know how to do it, you know? And, you know, I know how to get it done. Because I wanted to be immediately out of myself. I wanted to immediately be as drunk as possible, as fast as possible, to just completely numb out whatever it is that was going on inside of me. And so, waking up at that friend's house, My friends, I look at my phone and have a million missed calls from my friends. They can't find me, all this. Call them. I'm like with a, you know, with my tail between my legs. They pick me up. We go out to the Mesa Cafe to eat breakfast or brunch. And while we're sitting there in this cafe, the manager came up to me like several times and was like, "Ma'am, I just want to let you know, like, people are worried about you. You do not look well." And I was like, "What do you mean I don't look well? Like, what do you mean? You know, my friends are just sitting across the table from me, like staring at me." And I just was like, "What is going on? Like, what's happening?" And so driving home that day, I could not even get a full breath of air inside of me. I had to put my face in her vent of her car and like breathe like air so I could just breathe. My anxiety just from, you know, after the day after of drinking is just through the roof. I'm shaking. I get home to my family's house. I was living with my parents at the time, and I get home and I go in the bathroom because I'm sick and I'm hungover, and I look at myself in the mirror and I just was like, "You're gonna fucking die." Like, I was killing myself from the inside out. I knew it. I knew inside of me that I was gonna die. I had my face in the drain, throwing up for the millionth time in the drain, and I just prayed. And I prayed to God while I was laying in the bathtub, "Please don't let me ever drink again, because I know I'm gonna die." And that was July 27th of 2013. And from that day forward, I have not picked up a drink. And the journey in sobriety has been absolutely crazy. And it's been the best crazy ride I've ever been on. Absolutely. So I moved back to the Bay Area. It's like, I literally, but wherever I went, there I was. But this time I was sober. And I went with a boy. I used him for the ride, okay? He was a friend, and I used him for the ride. And so he took me, and I was still sick, you know, even though I was sober. I had no solution. I did not come straight into AA. I white-knuckled myself in here. So with that, I was went to the Bay Area, and then I moved in with my dad, and again, and I knew that I had to get my life together. And so I met my son's dad, and he was in AA, and he took me to an AA meeting in Marin County in the Bay Area. And I will never forget that first meeting. It was in a church. It was beautiful. And sitting down, and when they asked newcomers, and standing up with my hand up and saying, "My name's Mikey, I'm an alcoholic." And knowing it, and admitting it, and feeling it through my core, and absolutely just breaking down. And of course, every woman in the room wanted to be my sponsor. And I picked this one lady because she seemed really nice, and she wasn't very nice. She was actually extremely strict, and she was really hardcore, and she fired me. And I was like, that was not the one for me. But then I started going to young people meetings, and I got very, very involved in the young people's. And I met my sponsor. She was younger than me, but she was the brightest star in the room, and I loved her so much. And she started walking me through my steps, and I loved her. And I got to my fourth step, and I said, "Okay, I'm done." And so then I didn't want to follow through with my fourth step. And then I got another sponsor. And but through all of this too, with AA girl meets AA boy in their first year of sobriety, I became pregnant. And I had this beautiful baby boy inside of me, and my son's dad was scared, and he didn't want me to have him. And I said, "I don't give a fuck. I'm gonna have this baby whether you want me to have him or not. I am sober, and I don't ever want this baby to see me ever drink. And if you don't want to help me, I'm gonna do it on my own." So I ended up having my son, and my son has never seen me pick up a drink at all. which is the greatest. I had my son in sobriety through all of it. It's been amazing. And so, so up there, I moved back down to, how much time do I have? Oh, okay. I moved back down to Lompoc again because my son's dad brutally cheated on me. I was down here. After I had my son, I had my appendix taken out. And I wanted to heal at home with my mom and my family. And I caught my son's dad up cheating on me brutally. So I said, I'm done. I'm not going to do this. I moved down here and I was sober and I stayed sober through all of it. I left that relationship. I said, this does not serve me. I'm done. You need to figure your shit out. And so, I came down here. And when I came down here, he, of course, came to me and begged me and wanted to be a family. So I said, I'm going to give you one chance and one chance only. I'm going to let it go. But if you can't get it together, I'm done. Because I wanted my family to be together. I did not want to lose having a broken home for my son. I didn't want a broken home for my son. So I wanted to do everything that I could on my part to be able to give my son the best life that I could have and tried. Well, he didn't even last 2 weeks. He ended up cheating on me again, and so I said sayonara sucker, and I went on my way. And then I met someone. I ended up getting engaged to that person, and this is all in sobriety, but this is also half in, half out sobriety. That was a big part of my life for 5 years. I was sober, but I had no solution. I did not get through these steps because I get to step four and be like, I'm scared. Because a lot of people, right, we get to step four and we got to really look at ourselves. We got a really clean house on that step. We really got to dig in and we got to write out and we got to let out. And I wasn't ready. So I was so internally full of strife and hurt and pain. And with that engagement, I realized it was not a good relationship for me either. He was struggling in some things in his life, and I said, I need to leave. I wasted $20,000 on a wedding I did not have. I lost that in sobriety. And that was during COVID. We figured out, you know, we are friends. We don't belong together. So I left, and with my son. And because that no longer served me. And but during that time, I did find a sponsor and she did walk me through my steps. So through that time, I had more of a foundation to get through all of that situation for myself because I had a solution underneath me at that time by once I left that relationship. And then, through that, like, I've been here. And then for me, with God, this program has opened up so much of an experience of God that I've never could have imagined. Growing up in the church as a child, as a young girl going to church, I just thought, and I will never forget this, of a woman in these rooms explaining God as this white man in the sky. And I thought so little of God because I literally was like, yes, he's just this white man in the sky. And it's like, no. And my sponsor who did walk me through the steps, she said, just look for God all around. Just look for God all around. And I'm like, but what do you mean by that? And finally, I opened my eyes up to a world of like, oh, I get it. And then I started incorporating my steps and everything into my life. My dad died in 2020. So he passed away. And through that, I did not drink. I had another sponsor. She called me Self Will Run Riot because, like I said, I've always been one who I've came around and I've been here, but I've just never stuck. Because I also was one, too, that it was always like, well, nobody likes me there. Nobody's my friend. Nobody's, you know, and I always, you know, played the victim. But then I had to look at myself. I had to do the internal work. I had to see me and see that, no, like, I have to put out, too. That's why I give everybody hugs. I was taught that in this room. I was loved in this room. I had women to look up to in this room. I'm a really big one of women are women, just the women in this meeting, and in these meetings. I've escaped other failed relationships, but through all of this, like, and through, I finally have stood up on my own two feet, and I have my own place. I've got my own place. I've done that several times in sobriety, but this time I'm not letting it go. because also in sobriety with relationships and things like that, I can cling to anything, not just alcohol. I've learned I can have issues with other things, with shopping, with relationships, with other things. And completely, you know, if I'm not doing the work and I'm not looking within myself and bringing God along for the ride, because I am one who can run on that self-will. I can run on my own self and I can just go. I'm sober, but I'm a maniac. And nobody likes a sober maniac, let me tell you, because there is just, and because the next step is a damn drink, and then I'm dead, and I don't want that in my life. And so, I am so grateful. This past year, I've dedicated myself to coming back to meetings. I got on that fucking board, even though I hated that I was sometimes, and I call my sponsor and be like, I don't want to fucking be at that meeting tonight. But then that meeting turned out to be amazing, you know? And, you know, it's done nothing but at least get me here and sitting in a seat another day and keeping me sober. Because that's ultimately why we're here. We want to be sober. We want to stay sober. We want to give this to anybody who needs it. And passing along the message. And, like, I'm just so grateful. Like, I have a job now that I love. I'm an elementary school librarian. It is the best job in the whole world. If I was drinking, I would not be able to be of service to those children every single day. I get to be a light and love to those children every single day. The second my foot steps on campus, I have children running at me for hugs, for me to love them, for me to tell them I love them, for me to give them compassion and care and encourage them to read and send them on their way. Like, oh my God, what a blessing that is today. That I get to genuinely be a person that says, I love what I do. Absolutely. Like, not very many people can say that they love to go to work. I hate missing work. I had to miss work today because I'm helping my stepmom with something, which, you know, that's I can show up and do now these days. I can actually show up and do that. I showed up here. I'm here speaking at a meeting, which is such a pleasure and a privilege to get to be up here and share my story with all of you. And I really hope somebody heard something that they needed to hear tonight. And I have a wonderful sponsor, and I have wonderful friends, and I could be a friend today, and I could be a mother today, and I can be a good human today, and be kind and loving. Am I that every single day? No, because I'm not fucking perfect, and that's okay. Because that's something I could beat myself up on a lot, is perfection, right? This is progress, not perfection. And that is something that gives me grace. Now, and I have to remind myself of that, because being the perfectionist that I can be, I have to step back and go, no, I'm on progress and I'm moving forward. I am so grateful today. I'm grateful for the life I live. I'm grateful that my name is up on that board and I get to open these doors and I get to have all of you here for that meeting and I get to close the doors and go home. I'm grateful that I have a home. I'm grateful that I'm sober today. And something that I shared before is my mom may have birthed me, but the women in this program, you all raised me. So thank you. I love you.